Citizen Nation. You're listening to listener-sponsored KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. KPFK, powered by the people.
In celebration of Women's Her Story Month, we're opening the Pacifica Radio Archives vaults every Monday in March from 1 to 2 p.m. From the radical grassroots organizers of the 60s to the poets and visionaries who reshaped our culture, we're bringing you the authentic sounds of women making history. These are the recordings that captured a movement, uncensored and unfiltered. Today's talk is entitled Women Speak Out Against Fascism. It comes from a weekly series that was produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives starting in 2006 called From the Vault. The Archives then-director Brian DeShazer was the founder and executive producer of the series, and he's heard introducing today's program.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that takes our history out of the vault and onto the radio. On this edition of From the Vault, we celebrate Women's History Month by presenting a panel from the 1969 three-day Black Panther Party conference entitled Women Speak Out Against Fascism.
For too long, the victims of exploitation and repression and racism have been asked to pay the price to maintain a system which rewards and promotes the real criminals in society to positions of great wealth and power. Again, organize, organize, and resist. Power to the people.
In July of 1969, the Black Panther Party invited a broad coalition of groups to participate in a three-day conference called the United Front Against Fascism. They invited famed attorney William Kunstler, Oakland Mayor and future 13-term Congressman Ron Dellums, and other luminaries of the day. But what sets this conference apart from mainstream events of the time was the inclusion of people who worked every day to help end oppression in their community. So while conference attendees would hear the analysis of fascism from the likes of Ron Dellums,
racism becomes the convenient vehicle by which fascism may become an accomplished fact in this country.
They would also hear from relatively unknown speakers like Carol Thomas from the Southern Christian Education Fund.
Because of the economic and legal powerlessness of women, they have little or no control over their lives. Their sons, their brothers, and their husbands are disposed of by the ruling classes either as cannon fodder in war, in which these same people are asked to make total commitments and give their lives, while the fascist capitalists reap profits.
Today we focus on the panel, Women Speak Out Against Fascism. The term fascism was never clearly defined in this panel discussion in the same way, say, Naomi Wolf, for example, outlined 10 easy steps to change a democratic nation into a fascist state. But this was an opportunity for women from different perspectives to illuminate areas in our society where inequalities ran along class, gender, and oftentimes racial lines. Event organizers invited Marlene Dixon, a PhD of sociology from UCLA, as the keynote speaker. But she deferred a majority of her time to the women who had first-person experience with injustice in their community. Keep in mind that this panel was recorded in 1969, at a time when the FBI's COINTELPRO program was infiltrating and disrupting groups like the Black Panther Party, who were providing valuable services such as breakfast programs, health services, and educational classes to the underserved community. We begin with Black Panther chairwoman Elaine Brown reading a letter written by recently imprisoned Black Panther leader Erica Huggins, now a professor of women's studies at the California State University, East Bay.
I'll waste very few words of my own because Erica said just about anything there is to say regarding the fascist treatment not only of herself but of all, the political prisoners. This was written in Niantic Prison on July 8th of this year. Long live the United Front Against Fascism, down with the reactionaries of all kinds. It is impossible to say what I feel now. It would take too long and the state doesn't offer enough paper. But because none of us can be with you, I will try. I can envision as I write the people that will hear this. I can see their faces. I can feel their warmth, the warmth that comrades often have for each other. I can also see the faces of some who always appear among the people, the worried, empty, brutal faces of the agents of fascism. Worried because they know that people, poor people, oppressed people, gather together but for one reason, to analyze the conditions of their oppression and wipe it out. Empty because they have no feeling for the masses of people, for the souls of the revolutionaries we have lost, for the starving babies of this country and the world. And brutal because they will fight to the last ditch to destroy the revolutionary fervor of the people. They all continue to run back, oinking to the oppressors about the people's plans to rise up. They fail, however, to realize that the masses have boundless creative power, and no matter how they kick ass, beat us, kill us, or jail us, the people will carry on. I see the faces of change. I hope that many minds are open to what is happening. I know that many ears have been listening to the foul utterances America spits out at the world. We have listened too long, and the bitch, her mouth reeking of death, says, "We have thoroughly oppressed our people at home. We are succeeding at keeping Vietnam in a state of decay. We are trampling on Africa. We are destroying South America, making bigger and better alliances with Russia. We have only to wait for Mao to die, and we will be the world power, and then we will place our murder on the moon." America is plotting universal imperialism. It will be the same everywhere. First Coca-Cola, then Oscar Mayer Wieners, and then the troops. That's right on, Erica. The people cannot take this. We cannot allow fascist fanatics to continue to deprive us of our human rights. We must organize and form an everlasting united front against capitalism, against imperialism, against class distinctions, against racism, against fascism. We cannot allow concessions from the federal government for the continual harassment and unwarranted brutality of the people. We cannot allow our children, be they black, Mexican, Indian, Japanese, Chinese, or white, to be miseducated and degraded in America's degenerate school system. We cannot allow any more lynchings, bombing, and racial ignorance down south or up south. We cannot allow unions any longer to drive the working class. The working class must drive the unions. Our fight must be endless to organize the workers of this country, to overhaul and change every assembly line and every factory. We cannot allow medical services in our communities to remain inadequate. We need more hospitals, more doctors, more nurses, and less insistence on medicinal genocide or birth control. We cannot allow the reformists to clean up the surface while the inner structure rots. We need a revolution. All of our thoughts, each of our actions should lead us to one goal, the emptying of the shit that fills the bowels of this country. We can no longer allow the senselessness of anarchy and arbitrary destruction. We need no more impulsive, opportunistic movements, groups, or political parties that endure on socialistic rhetoric. We need socialism in practice.
Right on.
But in times of difficulty, we cannot lose sight of our achievements. We must see the bright future for the people and pick up our courage. We realize that there are people that support us and that however long we remain here, we serve as a catalytic agent to move the people forward. We only ask that you realize who your real friends and your real enemies are. We must draw a clear line of demarcation between the oppressors and the oppressed, between the imperialists and the internationalists, between the pigs and the people. Who sits next to you? All power to the oppressed people. Long live the people's revolutionary struggle. Long live the Minister of Defense. Free all political prisoners. It's Erica Huggins. All power to the people.
That was Black Panther chairwoman Elaine Brown from 1969, reading a letter written by recently imprisoned Black Panther leader Erica Huggins. Erica was arrested with Black Panther founder Bobby Seale on conspiracy charges, which were dropped 2 years after her arrest. Here is Women Speak Out Against Fascism moderator and Black Panther Party official Marie W. Johnson to introduce each guest.
Sisters and brothers, I greet you with a sisterly love on behalf of us here on the panel. I hope you didn't come here hoping that we are going to entertain you, because we just don't have the time. The people who will be speaking on this panel has not been chosen because of their revolutionary rhetorics. They were chosen because of their correct practice. I'd like to introduce you, starting with this beautiful sister to my left. She is Sister Carol Thomas, who is representing SEF, SCIF. Seated next to her is another beautiful sister, Sister Penny Nakatsu. She'll be talking to us about the problems of Asian people. We had hoped the native sister from America would have been with us. If Sister Deanne DeRyon is in the audience, we would love to have her among us. We have another sister who was detained because of delay of plane and is on the way at this very moment. So it doesn't matter the time, but how well you utilize it. And after all, like, we should really be out there with the masses. Continue with the introduction. On my right here, it's a beautiful sister called Sister Evelyn Harris. She'll be speaking about the problems of the poorest of the poor, the recipients, versus fascism. Next to her is seated another sister that's righteous. She's armed with correct theory and practice. None other than our own sister, Roberta Alexander. Seated next to Sister Roberta is another beautiful sister whom you'll get to know as well as I have. Her name, Sister Carol Henry. I'm Marie Johnson. Without much ado, I'd like to, first of all, set the tone to let you know that since we are equipped with correct ideology and correct practice, we know that fascism is terror. Fascism is genocide. It is the most vicious child of dying imperialism. It is most important for women to be able to recognize fascism for exactly what it is. Every day, we are being used as tools by the avaricious businessman to perpetrate fascism upon all of us, as well as the exploitation of people of foreign lands. This panel hopes to arouse a sense of urgency with purpose among women. We got no time for rhetoric. There's too much to be done. We must get it together. Heretofore, women had been thought of as merely being content to remain in a prone position. Well, things ain't what they used to be, and they never will be. Fascism is being escalated upon all the people. We do not wish to separate ourselves as a separate entity. We came from the people. And by our deeds, by our correct actions for the people, we hope to become that other half, not only of men, but of the masses of our people. It is up to every woman to join their sisters and brothers who are already in the struggle for survival. Survival. Women must acquire correct thoughts and perform correct daily actions. Daily deeds in a correct manner will liberate the minds of the women. There is no need to demand liberation. Get it together. Get the correct ideology. Put it into correct practice. And you'll be recognized by what you do, not just for the sake of being a woman, because we are of the people. We must not wait for fascism to vamp on us personally. An injury to one is an injury to all. You better believe it. Fascism is like a contagious disease. It terrorizes, and quite often it kills us. Remember a little sister from Nebraska? She was only 14 years old. Then we also have, facing a long prison sentence, Sister Erica Huggins. Brutality, fascism, she really knew it. She went through the same thing and is going through the same thing that Sister Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman. Along with Sister Huggins, we mustn't forget our brothers, New York 21. We never forget Brother Linscomb, Brother James Rector, Brother George Baskett, our own Brother Bobby Hutton, Bunchy Carter, and the late Brother Huggins of Sister Huggins. I have seen the mothers and the sisters. I have felt their pain. I have seen the young men coming from Vietnam, limbless. They relate to us. So I would ask the audience, don't dig on time, but dig on good deeds. So before I take up much more of your time, the sisters here have much more than I could ever say. I'd like to first present Sister Roberta. Please come.
Right on. I'd like to start out by saying, brothers and sisters, that there is a struggle going on right now. Our topic up here today is to talk about women versus fascism, the role of women in the movement. There was some commotion here, and I'd like to address myself briefly to that commotion. I think it's significant. First of all, there's a struggle now going on in the Black Panther Party. A lot of people around the country are confused about what's happening now in the Black Panther Party, around the woman question, around the role of women in the Black Panther Party. This confusion has been created and added to with the demagogy of the bourgeoisie, with their Larry Powells and their McClellan committees. They're adding to the confusion of the people, and the Black Panther Party now wants to stand up forward before all of you and explain a little bit of what's happening. We talk about divisions among the people and how the ruling class uses those divisions to weaken the people and to weaken the people's struggles. We are now faced with a rising tide of fascism in this country, and the people have to be united in order to fight this tide. Huey P. Newton says, as the brother earlier said tonight, that we have to limit our bickering as much as possible between the movement and make our concentration upon the enemy. This is correct. And we must recognize the enemy when we see it. This is also very important, because if we don't know what the enemy is, then we're in bad shape. Now, on the question of male chauvinism, on the question of male supremacy, this is a true problem in our society and reflects capitalist society, period. Women are placed in a particular role and they're expected to stay in that role. We have problems in the party. That's true, because we are part of a society, and if we were to say we didn't have no problems, we'd be lying to the people. We're not going to lie to the people. In order for the people to understand the question, we'll tell the truth. For the last several months in our party, there have been struggles over this question. And the struggles have gone through the whole gamut of possible, you know, problems. They've gone through women leadership, women being able to be armed, defend themselves as well as the brothers, whether or not the women do all the typing, or whether or not they also take part in the armed self-defense and the running of the offices and not just behind the typewriters. And it even goes down to the sexual levels, you know, whether or not the women are supposed to do so-and-so for the cause of the revolution, etc. And there have been a hell of a lot of distortions about the party's position on precisely this point. There's been a lot of struggle in the party, and at times this struggle has become so principled that we think more, we have thought more, this has been corrected, we think more about the contradictions between the women and the men in the party, between the sisters and the brothers, than we do about the pigs. Now there is a problem there, because that cannot be allowed. The pigs are out to murder us. The sisters and the brothers are class sisters and brothers. They're sisters and brothers in a struggle. And the party has addressed itself to this problem and is now being resolved, and it is being resolved correctly. It's being resolved through an intense struggle among the party. The women, as Eldridge Cleaver said, are our other half. They're not our weaker half. They're not our stronger half. But they are our other half. Right on. All power to the people. Power to the people.
That was Black Panther member Roberta Alexander from the 1969 panel Women Speak Out Against Fascism.
Being a woman, I have to correct myself. We got a beautiful sister sitting up on that end that flew in, got in here, about hour and a half ago, from Los Angeles. Many of you are familiar with her. Her name is Sister Marlene Dixon from Los Angeles. So we'll follow the program in order. The next sister will be Sister Carol Henry.
Greetings, revolutionaries. Brothers and sisters, all oppressed people. Yes, I said brothers and sisters, men and women. That sounds quite different from the animalistic terms that we often use to one another. Bitch, slut, cow, chick, nanny goat, and or oftentimes broad hole for those of you whose vocabulary have advanced to that complexity of decadence. I want to talk to you, and I only have limited time. And I don't want any more provocateurs standing up and running that kind of garbage. The acceptance of these crude terms, not only by the chauvinistic man, but by the woman herself, is a clear indication that respect an objective estimation of one's character is lost. Lost in an avalanche of insecurities and subjective, egotistical dispositions. Women, yeah, all you women, those of you who even shouted out, we are alienated from the word go. We have been alienated from basic humane relationships, humanitarian contact. We have been alienated from the other half, men. We have been alienated from our children, from ourselves. We have been separated by the tools of this fascist government, the bloody tools that have categorized us and deprived us socially, politically, and economically, and these are the same bloody tools that oppress us racially. Women, and especially white women who know so little of their oppression, women have been exploited mentally and physically by the color of their skin and the shape of their breasts. All I saw when I was a little girl was rosy cheek, straight head, white skin, blue-eyed baby dolls, and sex-symbolized commercials. And from infancy, this creating inside of me whitewash criterions, making me feel that if you're white, you're right, and if you're black, get back. This feeling of inferiority is just one aspect to alienation. And the other aspect is superiority. Both of these manifestations of struggle align with the contradictions between the oppressed and the oppressors. In a fascist society, these contradictions are expressed through racial antagonism. Among the demented minds of racist women, the struggle is in competition against other women for castrated. Friends, and women in particular, in unison, we must let our battle cry be heard. We will no longer tolerate the arrogant separatism and magnanimous distortions arising from any kind of discrimination. We will no longer tolerate fascist tactics to attain finance capital through the blood, sweat, and tears of the people. The pig uses any means necessary to exploit, dehumanize, separate, and conquer. Down with the pig, fascist pig oppressor. Long live the people's liberation struggle. Long live Huey P. Newton and Eldridge Cleaver. All power to the people. Dare to struggle. Dare to win. All power to the people. All power to the people. Right on.
Wow.
Continuing on in the order, I wish now to introduce you to our sister, Penny Nakasu.
On the question of male supremacy and male chauvinism, as an Asian woman, I can speak well and long. I can speak well and long of the heroic women who have died combating racism and imperialism. I could speak of women like Iva Toguri Dakino, who spent 16 years in an American racist prison for a crime for which she had no part in. I could speak of a sister who died in the 1950 struggles in Tokyo, died in the struggle against the re-ratification of the United States-Japan Security Pact. And I could speak well and long of the heroic struggles of our courageous Vietnamese sisters, whose example I hope all women can well follow and learn from. But I will not. What I came here to speak of today is a story that many of you may not know of, may have forgotten, may not remember. The story begins in 1942. Many of the elements of that story are duplicated here today and now in the year 1969. The dates 1942, 1950, 1969, taken together as a sum total, equate American fascism today. In case many of you have not caught on to what I'm referring to, I'm speaking of the incarceration of more than 110,000 people, human beings, for the crime of having yellow faces, of having Asian names in World War II. The story goes like this. There was no law. There was no 1950 McCarran Internal Security Act at that time to put my people, our people, into the what was then euphemistically termed relocation camps. There were 10 of those camps. I will not call them relocation camps. I will not call them detention camps. I will call them the concentration camps that they were and are and still exist today. I come from a generation of children born in concentration camps. Many of these places you will find no longer exist on the map. They were born in places with names like Manzanar, Tule Lake, Topaz, Roer, and on and on. In 1942, a presidential mandate issued by President Roosevelt empowered the racist military under the leadership of General DeWitt to incarcerate 110,000 people, more than two-thirds of whom were American citizens. Many of these people remained in these concentration camps for the duration of the war. All of them received between 24 and 48-hour notice to report to the nearest military authority, to report their belongings, to dispose of their beloved possessions within the span of 24 and 48 hours. How generous, how magnanimous our government was, how magnanimous our government will be when it calls on us to report. But when it calls on us, we will not be sitting in our homes talking. We will be prepared to act. We will be prepared to move. The lesson that I hope we can learn from 1942 is not to wait until we have positive, irrevocable proof of the racism and the all-encompassing determination of our monopolistic, capitalistic system to suppress all movements, all peoples who will work for social change, who will work for liberation, who will work for division of fascism and imperialism. Thank you. Power to the people! Power to the people!
Tell me that the sun belongs you and should surround you. Yet when I turn to look, I see they've snatched the sun from all around you. Why you hardly seem to want what's yours, you hardly seem to care. If you love the sun where you come from, then you had better dare to seize the time. The time is souls and your lives. Don't tell me that you lack concern for all that you must be, 'cause I know you must not be turned, and I know that you can see. To seize the time, the time is now. Oh, seize the time, you know how. You worry about liberty because you've been denied. have you never thought to see the time? The time is now, oh, see the time, and to know how.
That was Elaine Brown's Seize the Time from her 1969 album Seize the Time, Black Panther Party. The piece was arranged and conducted by the late, great Horace Tapscott, and his Pan-African People's Orchestra was the ensemble backing Brown here. Let's continue now with Women Speak Out Against Fascism.
I told you the people that were on this panel not only work at the stuff, they have the experience, they live it. From the Southern Christian Educational Fund, I'd like to introduce to you Sister Carol Thomas, who will be talking about the women and some of her experiences.
Good evening, brothers and sisters in struggle. Because of the economic and legal powerlessness of women, they have little or no control over their lives. They have little or no control over their children or what happens to them. Their sons, their brothers, and their husbands are disposed of by the ruling classes, either as cannon fodder in war, in which these same people are asked to make total commitments and give their lives, while the fascist capitalists reap profits. Or they see their sons, their husbands, as workers in an industrial machine, which is not for the welfare of the workers, but for the profit again of the fascist capitalists. Mostly, what I want to talk about is some of the experiences that I had when we women in Gainesville, Florida, came together around certain issues. First of all, in the summer of 1967, the welfare mothers, the mothers on welfare, many of them organized into a welfare rights union. They went to the welfare department and demanded the necessities of life. They were only getting 66% of what was supposed to be basic needs. The pigs came. That was their response. We went back 2 weeks later after having presented our needs. Again, the pigs came. The women then took their requests to the county commission in Gainesville, and the reaction to that was to have the police come out and pick me up as an agitator and warn me that these women, if they continued to go to the county commission and agitate in the way they were doing for the necessities of life for their children, we're going to start a riot. I don't think we quite realized our power at that time. We happened to win a few concessions, like, you know, a food stamp plan or a commodity distribution program, but the power still remained with the pigs. Later, well, for several years, I had heard women had come to me out of the city jail and said they were being sexually molested by jailers in there. I took this information on their behalf very naively to the police department, thinking they were going to do something about it. I then took it to, again, very naively to a Human Relations Commission, and they expressed the proper horror, and it was all covered up. None of the women that brought me these stories were willing to verify any of this in writing for fear of reprisals by people in the power structure whom the pigs represented. In 1967, we had some beautiful sisters come out of that jail, mad as hell. They were getting tuned into who they were, both racially and as women, and the power that they could command. We wrote up an affidavit which a brother, Jack Dawkins, then read to the city commission after the women had organized and gotten their sisters to the city commission and many of the brothers also. Jack Dawkins read the affidavit, and the immediate reaction was to cite him for contempt before the city commission. Failing this, they called for a grand jury investigation of practices into the city jail, where there were no matrons, and where women had almost died, several of them had almost died having miscarriages when the jailers didn't feel like walking up and attending to them. Well, we got the people there. The grand jury investigation was called for. The women came to the grand jury investigation and they tried to testify. Instead of allowing the truth to come out, their relationships with various organizers in the community was pried into. Dawkins and I had written a paper analyzing what we expected to happen. In other words, nothing. No action. There was going to be a big whitewash. Well, to show you the way the pigs work, the state's attorney Xeroxed a copy of the paper and took it into the courtroom and said that we had taken it in. And he arrested us for contempt of court. We spent four months and six months in jail. The conviction has just been recently overturned. But while we were in jail, we did a bit of organizing. The men organized the men's cell blocks, the women organized the women's cell blocks. And we found we had such tremendous strength in the motto, one for all and all for one. And every confrontation we had, that's the way we carried it out. We got piddly little things like, you know, maybe heat when it was freezing. We got a change in diet, a little less starch. We had to practically make a riot in the jail to get sick prisoners to the hospital, which we did. The very threat of our organizing made the jailers adhere to the law. The juveniles were to be kept separately from the adults. But again, well, also, before this was over, prisoners with problems were sending them to the women's cell blocks. And we sort of changed the policy about how trustees were made and this kind of thing. And before it was over, there was a big riot in the jail, and nobody knew why. It seemed that we were not allowed to really solve anything ourselves. It was all doled out to us, piecemeal, tokenism. And when we got out of jail, all of us that had undergone this experience realized that this was the same way it was on the outside. In fact, it didn't really make any difference whether you were in jail or out. The bars were the same. All right. We were out of jail, and the women stuck together. During the time we were in jail, a number of firebombs got thrown in protest. They tried to blame it on black people, the people who had, for so long, suffered the indignities and the oppression and the exploitation by the white power structure. The only thing they could think to do was to arrest the people who were most militantly protesting the situation in Gainesville at the time, which they did. The women organized and harassed the hell out of the pigs. They had student help. A number of fire alarms got pulled, a number of phone calls were made in which the pigs just, you know, well, they couldn't use their phones anymore because the lines got all tied up. The analysis was that since one of the students had gone to Cuba, that he had brought back Cuban sabotage techniques and were applying them against Gainesville power structure. And they predicted they were going to have a long, hot summer that summer. And they did. You know, it's funny how they always know they're going to have one. They plan it. Well, the subject of my talk was supposed to be how to control the police in the community. I don't think you can control them. It's part of a larger question. As to how the power is going to be distributed. Are we going to let the pigs in the Pentagon send our men to Vietnam? Or are we going to organize and educate our sisters and engage in political struggles and resist? Or are we going to let stand by helplessly and cooperate in the repressive powers that are in the communities, in our lives? No, we can't gain control in the present framework. We can only organize to resist the authority of the police and the courts which are the bulwark for the fascist exploiters. For too long, the victims of exploitation and repression and racism have been asked to pay the price to maintain a system which rewards and promotes the real criminals in society to positions of great wealth and power. Again, organize, organize, and resist. Power to the people.
Thank you, sister. We have a very limited time, not because of chauvinism, but because of fascism. They want to put the lights out on them. Well, we can wrap in the dark. Been in a dark, but we're coming out in the light, baby. This time, without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you from Welfare Rights Association here in Oakland, Sister Evelyn. Sister Evelyn Harris.
Greetings, brothers and sisters. I'm here on behalf of you, my brothers and sisters. I'm here to speak to you in behalf of the poor peoples, which is welfare recipients. I want to talk to you about some of the experience as well as education I've had. I am the chairman of the Welfare Rights Organization. And our purpose is to help the recipient to gain their pride and be as independent as anyone else. I have had the experience is working with the head of the welfare department, with private attorneys, legal aides, the district attorney, the probation office, and etc. You'd be surprised of the little knowledge that they know, especially the board of supervisor and the welfare commissioners. These are people that sit and make a budget for individuals to live on. For instance, I would take the budget for four, a family of four. Everyone talk about the taxpayers, the tax, their money coming out of their check. You'd be surprised what little money that a family receives to live on. And the DA, they sit there, deprives the mother of her personal problems, to expose her, to make her shame. But I want to let you know, if any of you in here that have problems, that is on welfare, there is no shame. You have a right to that money as well as the head of the department, other social workers. First of all, we are asking that we have qualified social worker which can be replaced by recipients. Everyone that is on welfare is not ignorant. They have the knowledge to computer budget. They have the knowledge to interview people. And this is what we are trying to get over, that we, welfare recipients, sit on the board of supervisors, help compute the budget. Welfare recipients sit on the commissioners and help make the laws. Welfare recipients can live a decent life and be just as proud as the next working man. Also, I would like to speak briefly that the problems, I can go on and go on, but the time is limited. That we're having problem with the school where the children in the school is branded because they are on welfare. The meal tickets that they receive, you'd be surprised at the food that they eat. And many of the children don't eat the food because it's not fitting. This is why that I will fight until I drop. Because no one else, I can challenge anybody in that welfare building, and I can do just as much as anybody else can do concerning the budget. Can no one live on, a mother of four can live on a budget of $221. There's PG&E to come out of there and your utility. That mother and one of those children are not being taken care of. This is the problem that we are faced with. And when they buy food or clothing, they pay tax on that. Because they are welfare recipient, they don't get nothing free. So they are taxpayer just like you or I. Anybody that works, they are taxpayer. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, sisters and brothers, while I can still read, the light's on. Our last speaker is none other than Sister Merlene Dixon, Doctor of Sociology, UCLA.
We're short on time. And I don't want to ego trip, but it's true that I have a gift for being stubborn, which the University of Chicago had occasion to discover. Which is not unrelated to a talent for unpopularity, either. And I can't make the little talk that I was going to give tonight without saying something about what happened tonight. And I think that it's important for people to understand that white women learned to be bitter and to be skeptical, and they have learned that from white radical male-dominated organizations. So tonight, I know that the majority of women moved not as provocateurs and not in bad faith, but they moved as militant women. And if you're not a militant woman, you don't belong in the revolution. But they acted out of their long experience with bad faith of white men. Yet, and this is important, if they acted wrongly with regard to the Black Panther Party, then let us forgive and understand one another so that we may have a trusting comradeship in a common struggle.
Now, can I have 4 minutes?
Okay, I'll try. I'll try 4 minutes. I wanted to talk about the rise of the women's liberation movement, and we'll see if we can beat the lights. The radical women's liberation movement was created by an international revolutionary movement, and is part of it. It was created by the myth of freedom, which was destroyed by the reality of oppression. From the beginning, women fought beside the men in the struggle. She gave strongly and courageously to the cause of everyone's freedom. But very often in the past, it was for everyone else's freedom and never her own. Yet we all know that missionaries make untrustworthy revolutionaries. So it was of the greatest significance that women, and most particularly white women, began to wake up, began to see that they were oppressed. We are oppressed, the women cried, full of early rage at this astounding discovery. We are not free. We are exploited. We are used and told to be happy in our enslavement, in our inferiority, our so-called biological inferiority, which has to some of our ears a very familiar ring. And over all of us stands the white man. Racism so long blinded women, so long hid from the white woman the truth of her oppression. The white man hid from the white woman her great strength, her kinship, sisterhood with all others like her, with all the oppressed peoples of the world. The white man taught his women to be passive, to be sexy, to be stupid, to be lonely, to be reactionary, to be the bastion of racism and fascism. In fact, what Marx called a whore, stood in the place of a living, vibrant, and precious human being, full of rage and love, strength and tenderness. Humanity will not be denied in revolutionary times, and these are revolutionary times. The humanity and dignity, the freedom of women cannot be denied and will not be denied, for women no longer ask. Now women are ready to struggle for their freedom.
One minute.
Half. The path of women will move and must move then from that of the missionary to the revolutionary. Women must be made to disbelieve in their own inferiority and the acceptance of that, if they are ever to be set free, and if in their just rage they are to become the new army, the new soldiers in the common struggle to destroy what is a corrupt and evil society and to construct what will be a just and free society. That is, they will be soldiers in their own right and against their own oppression. In this way, we may construct the steel bands of revolutionary comradeship. In this way, engage the battle, for people fight best when they fight for their own freedom. Together, as equal comrades, recognizing the solidarity of all oppressed people, we shall withstand repression, we shall endure, and we shall win. Each seeming failure only ensures the strengthening of our people and the broadening of the struggle. Hardly an oppressed group today, including women, is without the dream of freedom or without the determination to struggle for it. As a very great woman, assassinated by the German government as a dangerous revolutionary, Rosa Luxemburg, once said, "The history of revolutionary struggle is a history of failure, but you only need to win once, and we shall." All power to the people!
And that does it for this week's From the Vault. You've been listening to an excerpt of a three-day Black Panther Party conference held in 1969. This particular part of it was called Women Speak Out Against Fascism. This program is written and produced by Mark Tours and Brian DeShazer with special help from Jolene Beiser for research. The series is executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and your host, Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening and keeping our women's history alive.
Thanks for tuning in to KPFK's special Women's Her Story Month programming. We invite you to join us again next Monday at 1 p.m. for another visit to the Pacifica Radio.